On page Krupp test in the top numbers, page 497, 498 in the bottom numbers. And the reason why I'm giving the top number is because of the new English edition that just came out this week. And it's got different pages. So we're at the end of chapter 19. The last paragraph on the starts at the top of the page, Ha'oisiyos, the letters are revealed. We asked the question, what's the deal when there's no prophet like Moshe, and Moshe was able to prophesy and envision up to as far as Nehim of Bria, as Chesed and Gevurah contained in it, whereas the Arizal and the Shimon Bar Yochai, these rabbis were talking about before Tzimtzum and Ak and Kesser, and Moshe never even related to any of that stuff. So basically the answer that he gave was Moshe saw it, They just talked about it.
That's the Rambam.
Correct. They just talked about it. So now in this end thing over here, the chapter really, the question is over, it's answered. Okay, I make this statement every time I do chitas, because I think I'm at the end of the chapter when we get to the end of the previous page, because he answers the question there. But this little piece over here, which starts with a big letters over here, is an addendum to, I don't know if it's an addendum to the original letter, I doubt it, but it's there to, as a side point. And what he's going to explain in this page, this part of the chapter, till the end of the chapter, it's all one long sentence. And what he's explaining is, what does it mean, Nehim of Bria? You said that Moshe, his prophecy was the level of Chesed and Gevurah, as it's enclosed in Nehim of Bria. So what's Nehim of Bria mean? That's what he's doing right now. Okay? So, the Ha'oisiyos Haniglus Lanu Heim B'Maisa Dibur Ha'Machshava. So you're talking prophecy, and we say that the way that Hashem conveys prophecy is through speech, and speech has letters. And we also talk about the way that Hashem created the world, and Shar Yechid Vamunah has 12 chapters of letters. So letters exist in action, speech, and thought. Ma'isa hutmunis ha'oisya shebiksav ashur shebesefer Torah. What's called the action of a letter is that you're looking at a written letter. Like, for example, the Ashurian font of a Sefer Torah, for example. What happens is that is made by someone's hand. And so we call that the action of the letter.
Okay.
Ideally, the sofer who's writing a Sefer Torah, for example, when he's writing it, he should pronounce every letter, and he should pronounce every word once he finished the word. It's sort of like a spelling bee. Vayomer. Vav, Yud, Aleph, Mem, Resh, Vayomer. Okay, so that he's remains focused. Because when you think about it, all sofers do, is it's basically copying. They're looking at a Torah and copying it word for word. So that's really, when you think about it, that's pretty mindless. You know, and you can hypnotize yourself and dream someplace, and you'll start writing things that aren't supposed to be written. So you're supposed to articulate it. Now, there's another type of oisiyos, which are mice, which he doesn't bring here because it's not really the point. Is he wants to give an example of what does it mean, letters in action, letters in speech, letters in thought. But in letters in action, there are two types of letters. There's the written letter and there's the engraved letter. We have this on our tefillin shel rosh.
Yes.
There are two shins.
Yes.
One shin has got three prongs, one shin has four prongs. The shin that has four prong is supposed to be an engraved letter. It's an add-on, it's the same paste-on like the other shin, but it's supposed to represent an engraved letter. In order for you to engrave a shin into a stone, you're going to have to make four lines. So what happens is the shin is actually made by the space in the middle rather than the line. Whereas if you're just writing, you write three lines.
Write three.
That's why one side of your tefillin shel rosh has a three-headed shin, the other one has a four-headed shin. The difference between, it's talked about at great length in Chassidus, the difference between writing and engraving is even something like a Sefer Torah, is the letters fall off. when you write something.
Sure.
Right. You can erase it. You don't like it, you can change it.
Cut it up, right. Stop.
Yeah.
Scrape it up.
So it's easier to do, though.
Correct.
It's much easier to write something than it is to engrave it.
Correct.
But nowadays with computers and these things, you know, you can...
That's a different issue.
Yeah, but we're not talking about that. Whereas once a person engraves a letter, like in a stone or into metal, what do you have to do to erase it?
Cut it deep.
Basically, destroy.
Destroy
it.
The surface of the stone.
Destroy the face to the of the,
right.
the surface of the
stone.
Thing that, of the stone.
Material.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Because that now is more permanent.
Right.
And so, the Alter Rebbe in Lakuti Torah, I mean it's Torah. It's actually Torah Ur. Talks about when it comes to learning Torah, for example.
Yes.
The letters shouldn't be written within you. They should be engraved within you, so that they are a permanence.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's chakukais al haluchais. Okay. Is the expression that the letters, Moshe came down with the tablets, and they were engraved into the the luchais.
Right.
So it says it shouldn't be engraved in the luchais. It should be engraved al levavucha. It should be engraved in your heart.
Right.
Okay, but the Alter is not talking about that here because that's not what he wants to mention over here. He wants to give an example of action of letters.
Uh-huh.
And we see somebody had to like move their hand in order to create this letter.
Mm.
Letters of speech. What happens is you have this dividing up, this breaking up of the speech into 22 different parts, into 22 different strikings, you might say, one different from the other. Because we talked about in Shar Yichud V'Amuna, what is speech? Speech is basically you're exhaling. You're exhaling. When you exhale, you say a letter H or a hey when you exhale. Then what has to happen is you vibrate your vocal cords so that the hey now becomes an ah. Mm. So you go from ha to ah, and all you did at that point is you're just vibrating your vocal cords. Then what you do after that is you move your lips and tongue into certain positions, and then that takes the ah and turns the ah. If I close my lips, I get an ah and I get a ba. Which all a b is an ah with my striking my lips together.
Mm.
Okay, so that's all. That is what speech is. That's called the speaking part of letters, because I'm uttering those letters, as he says, in this specific form, so that you can understand what I'm talking about. I hope you understand what I'm talking about.
Conveyance.
Communication.
Right.
Right. Whereas Tom Lehrer was wont to say that people who have who complain that they have problems communicating should shut up. Anyway, so ki ein hefrish bein lashna kodesh bein shar lashinais b'mahus havaras ha'osius kiyam b'tzerufim. It says there's no difference between Hebrew and any other language as far as the letters are concerned. Rather, the only difference is the order. Languages are basically comprised of the same letters.
Okay.
All of them, you know. Okay, you got some weird things like you have in African languages where they put in there.
Yeah.
How do you spell that? You know, so when the internet first came out and people were listening to like wasting their time instead of doing research, there was a time when the internet was just for research. But then I got to the point where people were putting like stupid stuff on it. So one of the first stupid things came on was a conversation between a Satmar Chosid and a lady from Directory Assistance. And he calls up and he says, "I would like the number for my friend, Reuven Blecher." So she says, "Can you spell the last name, please?" And he says, "Sure. B-E-H-H-E-R. And it goes for that line that for about 3 minutes. Okay? She says, "What's that fourth letter? Ech. You know, blech, blech. Blecher. Ech, ech."
That is so bad.
So.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's, you know, different things over there, you know, and it's true that every nation has some letter that they can't pronounce. It's one of those weird things, and I don't know why it is that way. There may be speech pathologists who can tell me why Americans can't go and a German can go.
Right.
What's the difference? Many of these people living in America are of Germanic ancestry, right, because the ch also exists in Gaelic, yes, and it exists in Scotch. They speak Gaelic there. In Welsh, they have the ch.
Depends how much Scotch.
Yeah, it depends on how much Scotch they've had. Yeah, Scot.
Could be the German. I think it's they learned as a kid. This might be a skill lost as a youth.
It takes me time, but I can generally get somebody, finally get it. But then, you know, and then Russians, for example, can't pronounce an H, and that really befuddles me, because all the H, they can go. Can you go? And they can go. So I say, fine. Say hamburger, gumburger. Okay.
Exactly.
You know these Russians say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam. So why is it that they can't? I mean, you know, it's I don't understand the rationale behind it. Okay, so your alphabet doesn't have one of those.
Yes.
But
the Chinese can't say L.
So what?
You know.
Whatever. Yeah. I mean, you know. So
whatever.
So, but each of these letters is an expression of training your lips to and your tongue to move in a specific way as you're exhaling and wiggling your vocal cords simultaneously.
Yeah.
So there really is a whole lot going on when you speak.
Mm-hmm.
That's when we say that speech is unique to human beings, and we call them, the category, the kingdom that humans fall into is called Medaber.
Yes.
We have animal, mineral, vegetable, and speaker. It doesn't say animal, mineral, vegetable, and human. Okay, because when you're talking human, there's a lot of good points of comparison between a human and an animal.
Hmm.
And we're not talking about people acting like wild animals. We're talking about points of comparison.
Right.
You can use pig insulin. People use they have veins which are replaced by animal veins. They have skin grafts which are done with animal skin. There's all kinds of different things that they're doing. They're using animal parts and sticking them into human beings because essentially our body is an animal thing. But we're not, because we have the ability to speak and articulate.
Right.
And convey information. And we're the only creatures, the only kingdom in the world that have that ability. Okay, so that then is, it says there's no difference between the Hebrew and all other letters. The only thing is the difference of how you arrange the letters, you might say. And it's a very interesting thing that generally when a person learns a language, when they learn how to read, so now when they're thinking and they're thinking in that language, they're actually thinking in the letters of that language. I'll give you, for example, how do you say milk in Yiddish?
Milking.
Milk.
Milk.
Mem yud lamed kuf.
Yes.
Milk. So now, me as a Native American English speaker, when I say the word milk, what I'm thinking and articulating is M-I-L-K.
Mm.
Okay. The person who is a native Yiddish speaker, when they say the word milk, what they're articulating is mem yud lamed kuf.
Yes.
It's the same word, has the same meaning, and The thing is, though, with thought, there are three types of letters. I'm going to explain right now. Because when you look at, for example, the letters on the Sefer Torah, the letters that he sees, he can now formulate them in his mind. That's the idea of photographic memory, is a person sees the page and they remember the whole form of the whole page. Now, whether we want to say that this is textual memory or maybe it's a graphic memory, depending on how the person uses that. We know, for example, scientists have been working with this for decades already. A person with a very low IQ, lower than 70, who does not have the ability to talk. You don't have to teach this person what's food. They know that food, the stuff that's sitting on the table, is something to put in your mouth. They know that a couch is something that you sit on. They have no ability articulating and calling that a couch. No one told them that you're supposed to sit on couches. But they know, in dealing and thinking graphically rather than textually, that this is the way these things are utilized. So we're talking here about the letters as they're written on a Sefer Torah. The Alter Rebbe describes another form of letters of Oisiyos Shebaasiya, letters of action. Those are chakika, those are letters that are engraved. Like, it was the point is always mentioned that the letters of the Luchos, the tablets that Moshe brought down on the mountain from Sinai, were engraved letters. What's the difference, something that's written on paper or parchment, as opposed to something which is engraved, is when you write something on a piece of paper, if you want to erase it, so you can erase it and leave the parchment, the paper, intact. Even something written in ink, like in the Sefer Torah, you could scrape off a letter and you would never know that it's even there if you did a really good job. But if it would be that you would want to erase a letter in a that's been engraved in, say, a stone, so then you have to ruin, you have to break the stone in order to get out the letter. But the Alter Rebbe doesn't consider us over here. There's a difference over there, the idea of permanence, as to that your learning Torah should be not like written on a piece of paper, but it should be like it's engraved in stone, is the expression. Okay, very good. He's not dealing with that here. Here he's talking about the thought, speech, and action of thought. So this is the example that he gives of action, the action letters of thought. V'ken kasher shameya oisiyos hadibur. When a person hears something, you have an audio memory. It's much easier to memorize stuff if you can sing it, because now your brain's got this something to grab onto it, and you can, wouldn't say visualize, but you can remember those things that you heard. And obviously, if someone's speaking in a language you don't understand, you're not going to hear it. You'll hear the sounds, but you're not going to be able to repeat it. There's, for example, you can go on Google, and you can type in, or YouTube, you can type in things like, what English sounds to a French person? And they will have a video of a French person imitating what they hear when they hear English. It's absolute gibberish. It has the same intonation of a person speaking English, just like if I were to imitate a person speaking French, it would have the same but it wouldn't be speaking. So obviously, we're talking about understanding something. So in order to understand it, you have to know the language, and then the letters go into your ear. They are picked up by the otic nerve after they've gone through the middle ear, and the bones that are vibrating over there, and your brain is able to detect the sound of what this is and determine what this is and puts it into order and then stores it into your memory banks. And then you could recall them, you could think of them when you want to, hopefully. This is called dibur, speech of thought. Because a person's relating, their speech is the thought is coming specifically through their speech. And we call this yitzira, because the physical act of writing a letter, that's obvious, that's an action, that's the world of asiyah, that's the world of action. Here, what this letter has, what these words have, is they have a form. You can repeat it back, but there's no substance to it. The substance is just the air. That's okay. There's something there. It does say that speech is considered a small action, as because when this person's speaking Torah, for example, this person's learning Torah, in order to have credit for the learning of the Torah, they have to articulate, because we do live in a physical world of action. And when you speak, you're exhaling, and that exhaling is going, like you said before, through the vocal cords and causing all kinds of vibrations. And those vibrations are pushing air, and that pushed air is now causing your otic nerve to jingle just the right way. So that, we say there's something that is actually happening there. So there's a little bit of something there. Just like in the world of Yetzirah. We would say, for example, that an angel has chaymer. Usually I say that an angel has a form and contains no mass. So that one angel asks another angel, hey, what's the matter? He says, nothing. So, but there is something there. It's described in Kabbalah and other places that an angel is comprised of the elemental aspects of fire, water, and air, with no earth. And so, such a thing like that is not going to be visible to the physical eye because it doesn't have any. It's not made of a material. These are only elemental aspects of it. Like the source of fire is located underneath the orbit of the moon, as it says in an earlier part in Tanya. So this we refer to as Yetzirah. It has definitely an image. You could describe it. You could then take it, what you heard, and write it down. Bring it down into action. So that you could do. The Isis HaMachshava Levada B'lihur HaOisius HaDibur. But letters, which are just intrinsic, the person uses to think about them. No one told him what to think. He's sitting, he's thinking on his own. So those letters are called Machshava Shema Machshava. Those letters are called thought of thought. There's no impetus coming from outside of him. These are things that he is formulating by himself in his own brain with the power of the intelligence that he has, which is an expression of soul, of want and desire, and that he is sitting and thinking of these things that no one told him about. And so this he refers to as Machshava Shema Machshava B'chinas Briya. That's the world of creation. Now, you know, people often get confused and think creation must mean a something. But creation simply means, we say Bria, as opposed to say Yetzirah, Atzilus. Bria means it recognizes itself as a separate entity. Like, for example, the archangels and the neshamas. Even though it's true, if you were to draw a picture of a neshama, it would look exactly the same as Hashem. But it still recognizes its own existence, its own entity. And therefore we give it the title a Bria, a creation. V'hini Oisius HaDibur Mamish Hein Mishavi Mekobelos Chayesim Oisius Elo Atzma Shiba Machshava. So now, when a person speaks, so the vitality, let's use a normal word, the ability to speak comes only after a person's thought. And we could put a comma there and say, hopefully, that people are thinking before they're speaking. Because they, like we talked about earlier, what has to happen when a person speaks, this whole process of going from the essence of the soul through delight, desire, intellect, emotion, thought, all is manifest itself then and when a person opens their mouth. It's possible for a person to say one thing and be thinking totally about something else. I think that happens a lot with people that are sitting in my class. And the only reason why he can do that is because he's already said these words before. And since he said these words before, so he doesn't really need to think about them again because they're sort of like, they're there already. They're done. And he thought about it a lot. And there remains a trace from this speech in his thought so that he doesn't have to, so it goes right into automatic. As soon as he gets up to it again, he pulls it up again. It's kind of like Google when you start typing a word you typed before. It comes right up. Or Google thinks, well, maybe you want to think about this word. Same type of thing. Shenichnas pamper shenirabas. Zehu buchinis acharayim v'chaseni yisnehi. That now answers the question when we said that Moshe Rabbeinu, his prophecy was in Chachma and Bina in Bria, as it is drawn from Nehim of Atzilus. So what's Nehim of Atzilus? Nehim of Atzilus is Meparts of Elin Shenichnas B'Tachin L'Yesh L'Bukhinas Meichin V'Chayas Kineida. That's that aspect of the higher level of thought which comes now and is able to relate to the lower level, because Netzach, Hod, Yesod, and Malchus are not emotions. They are effectuators and actualizers. Netzach, the modus operandi of Netzach is, let's get this job done. Hod says, let's follow through and make sure it's done properly. Yesod says, let's set this thing up properly. And Malchus is, let's do it. So we see now, so where Moshe had his prophecy, okay, so what was he talking, what was he conveying? He was indeed conveying the will and wisdom of Hashem, as it's in Nehim, because Moshe, as high as his soul was, he couldn't relate to straight wisdom and will of Hashem, of Atzilus. It had to be, as it's enclosed already, to be actuated, as it has a purpose, as it has form and definition, even in the world of Atzilus. And that, as chapter 19, to be continued.